Rawan Osman groeide op in een bolwerk van Hezbollah, omringd door verhalen en antisemitische overtuigingen die haar wereldbeeld vormden. Na de brute aanval van Hamas op Israël ging ze zich steeds meer uitspreken voor de waarheid. Een pro-Israël activiste die zich onvermoeibaar inzet om de realiteit te laten zien via social media aan de Arabische wereld en ook daarbuiten. En nu is ze bij ons in de studio. Rawan, welcome. It's good to have you here. So you are half Syrian, half Lebanon. You grew up in Lebanon. What did you think of Jews when you grew up?
So my father is Sunni from Damascus, and my mother is Shia from the Bekaa Valley. Mm-hmm. And that is the stronghold of Hezbollah, apart from southern Lebanon.
Yeah.
And I attended a French Catholic school. So I already told you that I had a secular upbringing, because mm-hmm. it's not common for Sunnis and Shia to marry and to send us to a French Catholic school. Religion was irrelevant.
Right.
And every religious group in my upbringing accused the others of lying. They disagree on many things, especially that I grew up after the civil war in Lebanon, where the Muslims and the Christians killed each other.
Yeah.
Muslims killed Muslims, Christians killed Christians. It was horrific. Mm-hmm. And that was caused by the Palestinian cause, those who supported it and those who were against this agenda.
So you grew up in this situation. What was your viewpoint and the viewpoint of your family on Jewish people?
The only thing everybody agreed on is their hatred of the Jews. Whether you're Muslim or Christian or Druze, whether you're liberal on the left or the right, in the political spectrum, everybody hated the Jews and the Israelis and the Zionists.
Right.
And they use these three terms interchangeably. It is not true that we made a distinction between Jews and Israelis.
Right. We're going to talk about that later. But you are now in the Netherlands to give a few lectures. Tuesday, you were invited at the Radboud University in Nijmegen. It didn't go exactly as planned. can you tell me in short what happened there?
Yeah. It did not go as planned is an understatement. Mm. Before that, I was in Delft, and there were people who were against my activism supporting Israel. Mm. There was even a Palestinian guy who can speak Arabic. He challenged my point of view. We disagreed, but he did it in a civilized manner. So when we left all together.
Yeah.
I did not feel threatened by him.
But this is not what happened
what
yesterday.
What happened yesterday was very interesting, because I felt like I was in the Arab world. These were angry mobs, and the protest was provoked, incited, planned, organized by one of the teachers, Harry Petit. Mm-hmm. The university cannot, they're trying, but cannot fire him, unfortunately. And he was there outside like a coward. He did not come in to challenge my position. Mm. Instead, they were behaving like wild dogs trying to break the glass.
Yeah, we have a fragment, a video fragment of what happened yesterday. We're recording
also
this on
inside
Wednesday.
The hall.
Also inside. Let's watch it. It is a video in English.
Look, order. Order is your lecture.
It's brought military tactics of exploring Gaza to the occupied West Bank.
So how do you feel about what happened yesterday at the university in the Netherlands, because also inside there was a lot of screaming going on and people didn't want to allow you to tell your story. How do you feel about the fact that this is happening in a university?
A team of more than 8 men and women, security, police, couldn't stop them. We were interrupted 5 times, and ironically interrupted by a lady wearing a hijab, Syrian, I can tell from the dialect, another Moroccan, a group of woke Germans, someone from Indonesia, teaching me, and I stopped him and I asked him, have you ever been to Israel? No. To Lebanon? No. To Syria? No. And you're going to lecture me about our region, telling me, do you know about the thousands of children dying in the West Bank? And I asked him, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Book a flight, go to Israel. They have no idea what they're talking about. They are privileged, entitled Westerners, even the Arabs or the Muslims. Most of them have nothing to do with the Palestinian cause, yet they support the rhetoric that Hamas wants to spread in the West.
Right.
They're emboldening terrorists. When they say, do you want your hostages back? Then let the hostages out of Israeli prisoners. They are echoing Hamas's claims.
So the fact that this is being brought up in a university, the lecture that you're giving there, they are constantly interrupting you. What are your thoughts about that?
It was interesting for me. I was observing a phenomena that I anticipated more than 10 years ago. I've been living in Europe since 2011, and I've seen the dramatic shift in the continent. Not because I hate the Muslims and the Arabs, but I'm warning, I left as a single mother the Middle East because I identify with modern day Europe, with Western values, to raise my child here. I did not come here to live in the same environment, and I see them get away with it, and more and more and more.
Does
aggressive, hostile Muslims.
Does it worry you?
Definitely, and I will leave Europe.
Yeah.
I did not choose to live in this culture.
No.
And I love the Netherlands. I've been here so many times. I never witnessed something so ugly. The curses, the insults. It is normal for people to disagree with us. We cannot have identical mindsets, but the behavior, the attitude, this shift in the culture is very concerning.
It's worrying. So as you told, you have Syrian roots, you have Lebanese roots, you were born in Damascus and you grew up in Lebanon. But how do you look right now at the situation, what is happening in Syria? Because we hear on the news a little bit about the fact that pro-Assad groups are being hunted down by the current leaders. So what are your thoughts about that? What's happening there?
Interesting question, and I mentioned it in Delft, and yesterday again to the students who are teaching me about our region. I'm telling my story, not a Zionist, a propagandist. It's my own story of a recovered anti-Semite talking about anti-Semitism in the Arab world. And I lived not only in Lebanon and Syria, but also in Saudi Arabia and in Qatar. So I do know what I'm talking about. And I studied the Arab-Israeli conflict at university. Yet, and I'm half Syrian, for more than a week, I did not make one video on social media about Syria.
Because?
Because the situation is very volatile. Because what people don't understand, when you protest like monkeys on the streets without having informed opinions, you cause people to die back where I come from. So I'm very worried and concerned. I look at what's happening in Syria, and I try to speak to as many people as possible on the ground to understand what is happening?
Do you have any idea what is happening?
Yes. Just yesterday, I think I started to understand enough to make a statement. I don't believe that the situation is black and white. Jihadists of the new regime are slaughtering the Alawites who are affiliated with the ancien regime. It is not black and white. But if the new leadership in Syria, who got rid of Assad, thankfully, if they want to rule in Syria, and the situation is very chaotic and dangerous, they have to be able to control jihadists, because many of them are. They are former ISIS and Qaeda members. If they cannot have them under control, arrest them, put them away, they have to cede power for someone else. They keep claiming these are individual incidents because they did send some security troops to protect the Alawites on the Syrian coast. Mm-hmm. But it's not enough, because I spoke to people who sent me horrific video footage of children being killed.
Yeah.
If you cannot protect all Syrians, you're not fit for governing.
No. Now, the Alawites in Israel, which is a very small minority there, they ask Israel to protect their people. What do you think about that?
This is not exclusive to the Alawites. Mm-hmm. The Alawites, as well as the Druze, mm-hmm. asked Israel for protection. The situation is very different. The Alawites are very, 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 very tiny, a tiny group in Israel, and they asked to be part of Israel. The Druze have deeper connections, old bonds with the Jews, even before Israel became a country. And I interviewed many Druze of the Druze communities in Israel. Mm. They told me the history, and their leadership before Israel became a country decided to side with the Jews because the Jews were organized, the Jews would never kill one another, and they had a project, viable, realistic, mm-hmm. comprehensive plan.
But do you think Israel could do something for these minorities?
And the minister, Katz, said a few days ago that they will give work permits for Druze
from
in
Syria,
the Syrian
to work
region
in Israel.
To work in the Golan Heights and earn bread there. Yeah. But that's due to the old bonds the Druze and the Jews developed. Mm-hmm. The Alawites don't have this relationship.
It's a different story.
With the Jews, completely different story. And there is, and it's part of the anti-Semitic propaganda, a lot of Syrians claim that Assad survived ruling Syria for so long because the Israelis wanted him, because he never attacked the Israelis, which is not true. After the war in 1973, Israel and Syria signed a disengagement agreement in 1974, and that prevented a direct clash between the Syrian army and the
right.
IDF. However, with the fall of Assad, that agreement is no longer valid. This is why Israel had to swiftly destroy the military infrastructure, anticipating any attack.
Right.
Israel did not want Assad, and although the Syrian army did not attack Israel directly because they know they cannot win that way, they facilitated terrorism, and they were the corridor securing the smuggling between Iran and Hezbollah
exactly.
in Lebanon.
Yeah.
And they were a drug cartel producing Captagon, millions and millions of tons, spreading it everywhere, including in Europe. And that financed terror, because that money financed the so-called axis of resistance led by the Iranian regime.
Exactly. Let's go to the UN, because last week you spoke at the Human Rights Council of the UN in Geneva. Mm-hmm. We're going to watch a fragment of your presentation that you did there.
Are you outraged with the war in Gaza? So am I. My name is Rawan Osman. I'm half Syrian, half Lebanese. Since October 7th, I visited Israel 9 times, and I want to testify before God and you, Israel is not the problem. Last week, Israel buried Shiri Bibas with her children, Ariel and Kfir. Hamas said they had been arrested. Forensic reports show they were choked to death in Gaza. But many who point fingers at Israel might do better to look in the mirror. I ask Qatar, why didn't you arrest the Hamas chiefs in Doha and demand release of the hostages? Why did you finance terror? And I ask Iran, why do you send billions to Hamas and Hezbollah instead of liberating your own people who are suffering oppression and poverty? Egypt, you charged Gazans thousands of dollars to escape the war. How can you lecture about the morality of displacing Gazans? Jordan, why have you refused to accept any Gazans? Are they not your own people? Lebanon, instead of discussing Hezbollah's political role, ban the party. Syria, if the new president is sincere about his transformation, I ask him to return the body of Eli Cohen. It's been 6 decades. Allow his wife to bury him before she dies. Hamas abuses dead bodies. Be a better Arab. Be a better Muslim. Thank you.
What was the goal of your speech at the UN Human Rights Council?
I was in Israel, in Jerusalem, when the bodies of Shiri Bibas was brought back with Ariel and Kfir, mm-hmm. her babies who were murdered, choked to death in Gaza, were 9 months old and 4 when they were stolen, abducted mm-hmm. on October 7th. On their coffins, when they were paraded on a stage in Gaza before they were returned back, there was something written in Arabic, arrested on October 7th. This is not acceptable. This is the world we live in. How do you arrest a baby? And for what crime?
Yeah.
For being a Jewish baby. And after that, there's something even more despicable. Children in Gaza, and that's child abuse, went on the stage. They were clapping and cheering and dancing with festive music in the background. Is this insane or what?
So you
I promise you, in Jerusalem, yeah. the sky was crying that day. Mm. It was a heavy, 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 heavy week. Yeah. So I was asked by the UN Watch, by my friend Hillel Noya, if I would like to speak at the UN. And I did.
And you did. And you appealed also to the countries to look at in the mirror.
I could, in Geneva, unlike in New York, I could address countries. So I could call them out. Mm-hmm. Qatar, Iran, Egypt, Jordan. I could call them out for the hypocrisy they've been displaying since October 7th. And I could ask them, why are you supporting Hamas? This is terrorism. Why did you refuse to receive any Gazans? Mm-hmm. They are your people. You're Muslims, you're Arabs. Be better Arabs and better Muslims.
But then the critics could say, if you are saying to them, look at me in the mirror, isn't it just an easy way to deflect all the attention from Israel, what Israel is doing wrong, to the other countries?
I have been in Israel 9 times since October 7th. I have friends in special forces, friends in the army, experts, people who spent time in Lebanon and in Gaza. Do you think they are having fun? Did they want to do that? All my friends, when they kiss their children goodbye, when they go to war, whether they're deployed in Gaza or in the north, they do not know if they're going to see their children again. This is not fun. It's a war Israel did not want. Mm. And when the pro-Palestine mobs everywhere around the world protest against Israel, but simultaneously demand the immediate release of the hostages, then I believe they are interested in peace, and they're doing it for humanitarian reasons.
But this is not happening, you say.
Qatar could have stopped the war. Why am I deflecting attention from Israel? Embarrass Israel, force them to stop. Qatar could have arrested Hamas's leadership immediately and demand the release of the hostages. Mm. Why didn't they do that?
Yeah. What was the reaction of the countries that you addressed in your UN speech?
They heads turned around. They were trying to understand, who is this lady? And the speech sounds much longer than it is. In fact, I had exactly 90 seconds like everybody else. So when I start by saying my name, and I'm half Syrian, half Lebanese, and that I'm outraged with the war in Gaza,
then you already
they're
lost
expecting something else. They're expecting that I condemn Israel. Most of them have never been to Israel. And I'm telling the truth. I'm reporting what I've seen with my own eyes, what I heard from Palestinians, from Gazans, who are afraid to speak up. They're afraid of bullies, of thugs, of terrorists. They agree with me, and these are people who live there. I spoke to people who live in Gaza, and I know that reality is very different.
But do you think your speech is going to change something? Do you think you made them think?
A 90-second speech does not change the world, but every tiny action we take has ripple effects in the universe. A very tiny speech is seen by millions, gets people to think. And I mentioned this yesterday or the day before in Delft. An aunt of mine who blocked me on October 8th for condemning Hamas and siding with Israel sent me a message after my speech. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm proud of you. That means the world to me.
Of course.
People disagree with me because this is not an orthodox position in the Arab world. How can you betray us and side with the Israelis, with the filthy Jews? But they know nothing about Judaism or about Israel. And I have the utmost admiration. Every time I go back to Israel, I love these people and this country even more.
Yeah, how can you explain that the United Nations, which is like the most important international body in that we have in the world, is often very negative towards Israel? How do you explain that?
My understanding, and the UN Watch contributed to a very crucial research when it comes to the UN and to affiliated bodies such as the UNRWA, mm-hmm. the way people are selected to these delegations, to these missions, mm-hmm. Contributes to creating an anti-Semitic body. Mm-hmm. These people agree. It's an echo chamber, mostly, of people who hate the Jews, the Israelis, have misconceptions mm-hmm. about this tiny country, and they think this tiny, tiny, tiny dot in our region is causing trouble in a massive Arab world and Islamic world. If only they could disappear, then our problems will be resolved. Now, that is deflecting attention from your own responsibilities mm-hmm. as countries.
So you say this is like the general view of the Arabs towards Israel and towards the Jewish people. You also told us that you grew up in this kind of mindset. How do you explain the hate against Israel from the Arab world? Do you have an explanation for that?
First of all, we have anti-normalization laws and policies embedded in many constitutions and basic laws mm-hmm. in the Arab world, in many Arab countries, forbidding people-to-people contact with the Israelis. So even as an Iraqi, if you are on holiday in Thailand and you see an Israeli, it's illegal for you to speak to them. Mm. Sara Idan, former Miss Iraq, who took a selfie with Miss Israel, had to flee Iraq. That story is known to many. What you don't know is that Sara Idan is the only Iraqi whose nationality was revoked, unlike Iraqis who joined ISIS.
Because of what she did.
A selfie with an Israeli mm-hmm. is worse than joining ISIS and decapitating innocent people. The hatred of Israel stems also from anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish feelings in the Muslim world. For the first time since 1400 years, a minority dared defy Muslims' ruling mm. in the region. The area was ruled by Muslims. Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi took it from the Christians and the Jews. Mm. And this process cannot be reversed because it goes against the core values of Islam.
Yeah.
A non-Muslim will not govern, and yet the Jews are governing. And if that is allowed, what will you do about the Copts in Egypt, for example, or the Kurds in Syria, mm-hmm. Iraq, and Turkey? Minorities will start demanding their rights. Stop treating us this way.
Right. So you say it's very deeply rooted in the whole society, the anti-Semitism. So what happened to you? Because you grew up in this society. So when was the moment that things started to change in your mind about Jewish people?
So indeed, in the Arab and Muslim worlds, anti-Semitism has political reasons and religious reasons. In my upbringing, religion wasn't relevant. I grew up in middle class. People were liberal, progressive, secular. Yet, for political reasons, we hated the Israelis. And don't forget, when I grew up in Lebanon, Israel occupied the mm-hmm. south. They are accused of having expansionist ambitions. That is not true. Israel created a buffer zone due to Palestinian terrorism.
But you grew up in a difficult situation.
I grew up not knowing mm-hmm. the Israeli narrative. This is why I was anti-Semitic, because mm-hmm. I believed what the state told us about Israel, what our professionals, academics, politicians, journalists, etc. told
us. So what changed you?
When I moved to Europe, and I moved to France because that was my second language, so mm-hmm. that was the natural choice, I moved to a Jewish quarter in Strasbourg, and I lived near one of the biggest synagogues in Europe. And when I saw the Jews, I realized, well, they don't seem as bad as I thought they are. And at the beginning, I thought maybe the Jews in France are not monsters, but those in Israel are. It was a long process. At the beginning, it was an epiphany mm-hmm. because of a first encounter, realizing that they are human beings, just like me. And they're not just any human beings, they're actually nice. And they have no problem with me when they understand where I come from. Mm. So after a long process, because if you're gonna have a strong opinion about the topic, you have to do your due diligence. So after many years of studying the topic, the history of our region, after studying Islamic studies and Jewish studies, and understanding the organic connection between the Jews and our region, the Jews are indigenous to the Middle East. They're not aliens who came from Poland.
No colonists from Europe.
No. They're not colonizing. They did not come to the region to exploit the treasures, the natural resources of our region, of this country, Palestine. Mm. When we learned about it, this is what we learned, but also that the Jews came from Eastern Europe to steal Palestine. And the story implies that Palestine was a country. And I said this yesterday again, and it drove people crazy.
Yeah.
They put it on Twitter, or ex-Twitter, saying, condemning me, exposing me. She said Palestine doesn't exist. Dude, it's a fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Palestine never existed with political borders. It is a project, a legitimate project. Mm-hmm. It never materialized because of the attitude of the so-called Palestinians and their supporters.
Exactly.
Something we witnessed yesterday at the university.
So you told us that you moved to France, you met Jews, and you realized slowly but surely that they're not monsters. But then it's still a big step between this epiphany and between advocating for Israel. So how did you decide that it's important as a Syrian Lebanese person to advocate for Israel?
So realizing that we are intensively brainwashed, I was filled with rage. I was outraged because many senseless wars could have been avoided had the Arabs accepted to share the land with the Jews. But I could not change anything, right? Because I'm one person. This is what we all think. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't so active, but after the signing of the Abraham Accords, which was a historical moment, shift in our region, I was filled with hope and optimism.
That something would change for the good.
Absolutely, and I'm still optimistic. Things will change for the good. I was part of the first delegation, Arab delegation, to participate in the March of the Living in Auschwitz. Arabs came from Bahrain, from Morocco, from Lebanon. It was really interesting, from Lebanon, but those who live abroad, not in Lebanon. Things were changing, and we were taking Arab delegations to Auschwitz and also Arab delegations to Israel. We didn't want them to pity the Jew. Oh, look what happened to them. Look what the Nazis did to the Jews. So tolerate them in the Middle East. No. The trip ended in Israel so that they see what the Jews created in spite of the Holocaust.
Right.
And to be inspired. I never went to Israel before October 7th because I knew the moment I go there, I can never return to Syria and Lebanon. And maybe I want to go to the funeral of my grandmother. Mm. But on October 7th, in a heartbeat, I made the decision to give up, voluntarily give up my right to return to countries where October 7th was celebrated. I went to Israel and I know that I'll never regret it. I will never look back.
But
it was
a difficult choice.
Thing to do. I'm proud of it, and I know it's the right thing to do. Mm. The same way people sided with the Nazis back in the 40s, later in life, people will realize that they are supporting terrorism, that they are brainwashed, that they do not see the full picture.
Right.
And becoming an advocate, like, what am I changing? My life transformed dramatically. And I heard so many stories that touched my heart, especially when a Jewish student in Canada tells me, for example, I wanted to drop out of college, but no, after I heard you, I will not vacate the space for bullies. When I hear, and this is something people don't think about, when I go to Israel, I meet a lot of Israelis. Many of them told me, thank you for reminding us of who we are. Hmm. Like, what do you mean? They said, our hearts hardened so badly. We hated the Arabs so badly after October 7th, especially those who had hostages in Gaza, those who lost their sons and daughters. They said, we were filled with hatred. And you came to remind us that not all Arabs and Muslims support that.
Yeah. So talking about that, because you're also active on social media, reaching the Arab world with your message, what are the reactions that you get? Do you think there is also coming a change in the Arab world?
Definitely. I was positively surprised. On Instagram or Facebook or X, most of my following are supporters, Zionists or Israelis. They all pat me on the back. They're proud of what I do. But this is not what I want to do.
You want to reach the Arab community.
So exactly. How do I reach the Arab world if all my friends and family members blocked me on October 8th? I decided when the war started in Lebanon in the summer to make a TikTok account, because it's a very anti-Semitic platform, mm-hmm. and to post at the beginning only in Arabic, wearing my Star of David, talking about peace between Israel and Lebanon, peace between Israel and Syria.
So what happened?
And I was so surprised. Without English subtitles, I did not want the Zionists to come and support me. In 2 months, I had more than 60,000 followers. Of course, a lot of the comments bash me and tell me what they're gonna do to me, but I was surprised because sometimes 50 to 40% of the comments, hundreds and sometimes thousands of the comments support me. And they say, we're proud of you. I wish I could be as vocal as you are. You are the future. Mm. We want peace with Israel. We want to join the Abraham Accords. We want Lebanon to look like, we want Beirut to look like Dubai. We want Damascus to look like Dubai, not like Gaza. So something is changing on the ground. But these positive comments we get from Arabs suffering the consequences of the choices of the axis of resistance. Those who live there, who have no money to feed their children, they want peace. But the privileged ones living in the West, in Toronto and in Sydney and in Amsterdam, they want war because they don't have to face the consequences themselves.
I have one final question for you, Ravan. Because a lot of people are watching this show, there are the people that pat you on the back, you know, the people, the Christian people who support Israel. What can we do to take action, to speak out in our environment? You do it in the Arab world, you do it at colleges, at universities. What can we do?
It is your responsibility and your choice. I thought I'm one person, what can I change? I was surprised with what I could achieve in 1 year. All of you, you are massive societies. The EU is massive. What do you want for your children? How do you want your grandchildren to live? Because at the moment, I'm optimistic, and I know Israel will prevail, but I'm not optimistic in Europe. I don't want to live here any longer. Mm. I've been warning, but it's like talking to the wall. If we criticize such attitude, such behavior, people bullying you, trying to silence you, and telling you, you're trying to cancel me. Nobody's listening to us. We want to defend the Palestinians. Everybody's listening to you. You occupied so much space. You are in our face all the time.
So what can
you
we do?
You want to cancel us. It's up to you. Get involved in politics. You need legislators to legislate, to change the laws, to change the rules, to show consequences for people who try to lynch us, for daring to voice our opinions. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe by supporting Israel, we are wrong. But lynching us in a democracy in the Netherlands, this is how they behave, hiding their faces, trying to lynch people for what? They don't know me. Because I'm affiliated with the Jews, this is what's happening in Europe today. It is up to you to put universities and schools and media outlets under pressure to demand of your politicians action. The police are lost, they're confused. They stand everywhere watching people raising the flags of Hamas, of Hezbollah, of ISIS in the Netherlands, in Germany, in the UK. What are you waiting for? The police follow the rules, change the rules.
Yeah. So speak out, don't be afraid, even though it might be scary.
Otherwise, you're going to lose your cultural values. They're going to be replaced by different values. They're not going to tolerate you very much. They're going to tell you how to behave, what to wear, and what to do. Today, Europe looks like the Arab world I left.
Yeah. Thank you for your warning. Thank you also for your message, Ravan Osman. En u ook thuis, bedankt voor het kijken naar deze uitzending van Christen voor Israël. En u kunt op de hoogte blijven over de actualiteit in Israël en ook in ons land. Ga naar onze website cvi.nl/actueel. Daar vindt u ook deze uitzendingen weer terug. Nogmaals, veel dank voor het kijken en graag tot de volgende keer.